both fucks.
Hey guys, I'm Chris.
Hey everybody, I'm Robert.
And we're the Film Flamers.
And we are here to talk more zombies with you like we do in March. In fact, we're going to be talking about a movie that was on one of our polls over on Patreon, and then people were saying good things about it. So we decided to take a chance. If you change your mind, this movie was first in line.
Okay, that's enough of that.
I know. Okay, we'll calm down the gay.
Right, and so we were told, I think, several times that we should watch Cargo, especially after the last poll winner, which was The Girl with All the Gifts won.
Right,
yeah. Right. I think Cargo was a close second or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the first time that's come up, so we decided, hey, we'll just take a chance. And these dancing queens have chosen
Cargo shorts.
I haven't worn cargo shorts low these many years.
That's why you still have your gay card.
Cargo is a 2017 Australian post-apocalyptic horror drama film directed by Ben Howling and Yolanda Ramke, with a screenplay by Ramke based on their 2013 short film of the same name. The film stars Martin Freeman of Hobbity fame,
mm-hmm,
and Holmes fame, as well as Simone Landers and Anthony Hayes, David Gulpilil, and Susie Porter, along with Karen Pistorius. The music for the film was composed by Jeffrey Gurumul Yunapingu, and the plot follows a couple and their baby traveling in the Australian bush in the aftermath of a zombie apocalypse.
Good job on that composer's name. I got scared looking at it. Okay, listeners, some of you asked for it. This is Cargo.
You're the first people I've seen. The first people who are still people.
What's the count left on them?
46 hours, give or take.
They're setting out hunting parties. If you want to give this baby a second chance, you just stay away.
What's this?
Just making hay while the sun shines.
The sun's not shining, Ben.
I'm not going to hurt you. Promise you. Let's help each other.
Rosie?
This way. We gotta find a clever man. If you're sick, he can give you good medicine.
If I don't make it to the hills,
you're all I've got.
You can't lose hope.
Any girl you need to be worried about is your own.
We're here. So when things get back to normal, it's not gonna happen, is it?
I don't think normal's on the horizon.
Australia and its bush have been overtaken by a virus that turns people rabid within 48 hours. The government has issued handy kits that come with wrist timers and self-lobotomizing spikes, just in case you're bitten by an infected person. Andy, played by Martin Freeman, and his wife, Kay, played by Susie Porter, have taken their daughter out into the bush and are traveling down a river in search of safety. They're low on food and supplies. Kay wants to go ashore and scavenger for stuff, but Andy believes it's safer to be on the water. One day, Andy spots an abandoned yacht and searches it alone. He finds foodstuffs, but no razor, much to Kay's chagrin. Kay, believing the yacht to be safe, after all they're in the outbush, goes to look for supplies herself, but is bitten by an infected person. Kay starts her wrist timer, and Andy decides they should set out on land to find a hospital, as Kay would bleed out long before succumbing to the virus. They restart an abandoned car and set out into the bush to a larger town nearby. While driving in the bush, they swerve to avoid hitting an Aboriginal man and crash. Kay is impaled and Andy faints. By the time he wakes, Kay has turned rabid and bites him. Andy gets Baby Rosie out of the car and prepares to defend himself against the man, who is also rabid, but is stopped by Thumi, played by Simone Landers. Thumi reveals that the man is her father, Willie Bell. Thumi has been hiding Willie from her mother and the rest of her community because Aboriginals are systematically burning the infected. She believes her father can be cured by having a shaman restore his soul. Andy starts his timer and goes off to find treatment or someone to care for his daughter. Andy reaches the town, but this is the bush we're talking about, so it's much smaller than anticipated, and deserted, apart from Etta, a schoolteacher. Etta explains that all of her students and their families, most of them Aboriginals, have discarded modern trappings and gone back to the old ways. She warns Andy to hide his bite mark. Could be dangerous about these parts. Andy wakes later than planned the next morning after experiencing his first seizure from the virus. When Andy and Rosie leave, Etta shows them a picture of Thumi and her parents and tells Andy to find them and leave Rosie in their care. Andy assists a man named Vic, owner of a fortified shelter, and meets Vic's apparent wife, Lorraine. Andy learns that Vic uses healthy humans in cages as bait, one of whom, coincidentally, is Thumi, to lure out the infected so he can shoot them in the head. That night, Andy attempts suicide, believing Rosie will be cared for by Vic and Lorraine, but Lorraine stops him and reveals that she is not Vic's wife, but his captive sex slave, and Vic murdered her real husband. Vic discovers them and knocks Andy out, and he awakens caged with Thumi. They help each other escape by using a combined strength of many infected to pull open their cage. As they escape the shelter with Lorraine and Rosie in tow, an enraged Vic shoots at them, inadvertently killing Lorraine and her bobbit.
My bobbit!
The following morning, back out in the bush, Andy upsets Thumi when he tells her that he and her father will not get better. She runs to where she's been hiding her father, but finds her people had already discovered Willie and put him down. Initially distraught and blaming Andy for delaying her, Thumi relents and rejoins him when she hears Rosie crying. They travel by motorboat to a campsite where Andy previously saw another family, but learn that their father has been bitten and plans to kill his family and himself with a revolver. The father tells Andy to use the gun's last two bullets on himself and Rosie. When the family's dead, Andy takes up the gun and considers suicide, but is stopped by Thumi. They then notice smoke nearby and move to investigate. As the trio passes through a railway tunnel, they re-encounter Vic. Thumi hides with Rosie while Andy and Vic fight. Vic manages to grab the revolver during the struggle and shoots Andy, and then goes after Thumi and Rosie. When Andy recovers, he finds Vic cradling Rosie and weeping over the loss of Lorraine. Vic peacefully returns Rosie to Andy and allows them and Thumi to leave. Andy's nearing the final stages of the virus and knows his time is short. He asks Thumi to look after Rosie, but she has a lot of bush to travel alone with a baby. But there's a plan. Thumi's people are burning and killing infected people when they see a figure heading towards them through the smoke. Suddenly, out of the smoky bush, walks an infected Andy, hands bound and meat on a stick in front of his face. On his back are Thumi and Rosie. They rode him through the outbush to safety. As the group checks Rosie for injuries, they notice that Andy had painted the words thank you on her belly. Before the group puts Andy out of his infected misery and ending his time in the bush, Thumi sprays Kay's perfume all around him, hopefully making him realize that she and Rosie are safe and will live in the bush.
The bush?
The end.
I've never said that word that many times.
Boosh. People in France right now are like, why do they keep saying mouth so much? Spending his time in the mouth? What the fuck movie is this?
The gaping maw that is Australia.
Exactly.
The boosh of Australia.
That's all Australia is out boosh. With like a city peppered here and there.
Peppered here and there. We're sorry, Australians. We know you love us. And we love you.
And we love you dearly. But y'all got a lot of boosh. Car- Cargo premiered at the Adelaide Film Festival in October 2017 and was released into Australian theaters and on Netflix elsewhere in the world the following May. Netflix doesn't like to release data. We have nothing to talk about with that. But in Australia, the film grossed a little bit more than $56,000. There's no reported budget for comparison.
Yikes. Okay. Yeah. So Cargo. 70s Boosh. Cargo holds an 87% on Rotten Tomatoes and is certified fresh. The audience score sits at 67%, so this is about 20 points lower. Yeah. The site's consensus reads, Cargo takes a refreshingly character-driven approach to the zombie genre that's further distinguished by its Australian setting and Martin Freeman's terrific lead performance. On Metacritic, the film has a weighted score of 65 out of 100, indicating generally favorable reviews.
Okay. The film has been described as a tribute to the 2009 film The Road. A tribute. It's an interesting word to use. In a positive review, Brian Tallarico of RogerEbert.com stated that he believed George A. Romero would have enjoyed the film. Clark Collins of Entertainment Weekly gave the film a B, saying the Australian setting brings a fresh and epic quality to this now done-to-death genre.
Wow. So that's a lot to unpack there. I also think George Romero would have liked this.
I do too. Mostly because it's mostly about the human drama and less about the zombies, right?
Yeah, and there's some social political context there.
Yeah, there is. And there's some race relation.
Mm-hmm.
However, I feel like George A. Romero, Jorge, as we lovingly call him, would be saying, but where are the zombies in the zombie movie?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. However, Frank Sheck of The Hollywood Reporter criticized the film for being, quote, unlikely to satisfy either viewers looking for serious-minded fare or horror fans looking for genuine frights, unquote. But praised Freeman's quietly intense performance. I think I agree with that.
Do you think it's quietly intense?
Yes, I think Freeman's quietly intense performance is quietly intense.
Hmm.
I also think it lacks genuine frights.
Yes. And we are horror fans, so...
Yes.
I did not find any of those here, but we have questions later on that we'll answer all that stuff.
Ooh,
all
those excited. Things. I'm excited to see what that might be.
It does have some almost accolades. At the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards, it was nominated for Best First Feature and Best Supporting Actress for Simone Landers.
Well deserved.
Yes.
Australian Academy of Cinema and Television Arts.
Like the Australian Oscars.
Nominated it for Best Film, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Sound, and Best Production Design.
What production design?
It was the Boosh. The
fucking outboosh.
I don't know.
Are they talking about that fortified shelter?
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a little too hard on it already.
Outboosh Steakhouse.
Outboosh Steakhouse. We were watching this and I was texting with someone and they said Outback and I was like, a moderately priced steakhouse has nothing to do with this movie. Yeah.
How sad.
It is.
Okay. So let's get something out of the way. There's nothing super new or original here.
No.
Right. Especially if folks have pointed out that similarity to The Road from 2009, starring a pretty stacked cast, but it was led by Viggo Mortensen, if memory serves. Also a wet Grinch salad, although much more so in my opinion, and probably a more effective one of that. I think Charlize Theron kills herself in the first 30 seconds of this movie.
On The Road?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so The Road is based on like a really, really good novel by McCarthy, you know, like an excellent novel. And I've never made it all the way through the movie, right? Because I like the book so much more, right? Yeah. And I can see some similarities between this and The Road. Not a lot, though. I feel like The Road is far superior and I haven't even finished that film.
As a film, yeah, but it also kind of belabors its own point. And it's just like a wet Grinch salad on top of a wet Grinch salad. And they don't really give us any time to breathe, you know, or give us any much contrast in that slog.
Well, doesn't that movie even look like a wet Grinch salad? I mean, like, it's all very, like, pale and...
Oh, yeah. It's all almost like black and white, but it's like in shades of blue or something.
Yeah. And so, yeah. Like, at least this movie is taking place like during the day for the most part.
Yeah. And the setup for that was also post-apocalyptic, but it was like an extinction level event where no plant or animal life can survive.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, also, when comparing this to something that came out a year prior with 2016's The Girl with All the Gifts, which actually did feel like it breathed some new life into the zombie genre, and which I think that's something that our patrons had us watch a year ago.
That's right. So, I mean, so that's what won in the poll last year. And Chris and I were pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, we loved it. We have to deep dive it.
We really want to. And, you know, as Zombie Month rolls back around, I feel like, you know, that movie needs to be revisited, you know, and by the time that happens, some time will have passed between our watch. But if you haven't listened to that bonus episode, have our Patreon and do that. And so when everyone was saying, like, this is also good, you know, for like a zombie sub-genre, I was looking forward to watching it, right? But as I was watching this movie, I was like, it's super not original.
Yeah, and that's not to say that you can't have a good, solid, unoriginal film. Like, look any, basically any James Cameron movie, right?
Right.
I'm just saying, like, unoriginality here didn't do it any favors. Especially yeah. In a genre that's been done to death.
Well, and as I was looking at reviews on Rotten Tomatoes and even the consensus before watching the movie, I was like, okay, you know, they're going to do some things in here that I've never seen before. And I've seen a lot of zombie movies.
Yeah.
And I was wondering every step of the way, at every point in this film, like where they thought this was like breathing new life into a quote unquote, like done to death genre, and all those fucking done to death, like puns when talking about a zombie movie.
It was the imagery of the man with the baby on the zombie with the baby on his back being led by his own trap, right? That was the imagery that really caused the short to happen, and I even feel like I've seen that before in something.
Yeah, we have seen lots and lots of movies where zombies are sort of like used in that regard, mainly in like The Walking Dead, where the character Michonne was like leading zombies or using zombies to her.
Yeah, and I think we've even seen it like them like following stuff like and pushing stuff. I feel like I've seen that kind of concept in multiple zombie movies, maybe even in a Romero one, the one on that island.
Survival of the Dead?
Yeah. Maybe. Uh-huh. I think it might have been on that one too. I'm not sure. I could be wrong with that, but it didn't feel new to me. It didn't feel like, you know?
Well, by the time this movie came out, The Walking Dead had been on TV for quite some time. And this movie feels like a response to The Walking Dead to me.
Huh.
And so it's just like saying that something is new or fresh while copying something that's current. A contemporary.
And the only reason we're even bringing this up is because we keep hearing that from the producers of this movie, or like at least from the marketing of it, you know, and from some of the people that are writing reviews and stuff. And it's just like, it certainly just doesn't really bring anything new to the table is what we're trying to say. And like I said, that's not necessarily a sin, you know, it's just, it's kind of a rebuttal is what we're going for here. But like this movie is technically good. Like from every discernible angle, something about it just seems kind of soulless. Or by the numbers. And I was thinking to myself, could this be like Martin Freeman's performance, which seems like incredibly stoic as he just like moves through the story with a straight face? Like when his wife dies and like when all this horrible things are happening, like he screams once, but that's basically it. Like he's just very matter of fact, this whole movie. And it's like, we need an emotional center. Would it have been too stereotypical to have the mother travel cross country with the baby? Or I don't know, just get an actor, maybe even younger, so it's more tragic, you know, based on the unfortunate youth trope. But maybe that would make people care more about the things happening around them. You know, like maybe find someone that, you know, you can empathize with a little bit more when they, you know, they have the death of their fucking wife, you know. I think Martin Freeman is an excellent actor and I'm a really big fan of his, especially from, you know, he's been in Marvel. He's been in Sherlock, you know, he's been in the Hobbit movies. You know, I'm a fan of all of his work that I've seen. And I even really liked him in Ghost Stories, right?
That's what I was going to bring up. Is that like,
but it just, he's, his acting style, his style here for me, at least subjectively, just didn't really feel very effective here. I needed a stronger emotional hook and he's just not reacting in a Spielbergian sense, basically to anything going on around him. And maybe it's just my American sentimentality that, you know, his direction seems to be, we are in the middle of your story. You've already reacted to death of your family and friends and to society collapsing. This is all old hat to you and it was kind of inevitable. So you kind of like pre-grieved your family. And I feel like all that direction is wrong for an audience that's also beginning this in the middle of their story.
I also like him as an actor. I really enjoyed him in Ghost Stories. It's one of the only things I enjoyed about Ghost Stories was his performance.
Yeah, I liked one or two particular segments in that. Yeah. And then his acting was great.
you're right when it comes to this. I feel like his performance is not that great. And I think it's okay to be stoic in certain parts because he has an end game in this. Like, his character is looking for means to an end. Like, he's trying to just find someone to take care of his daughter. He knows that he is going to die, right? Or worse, like, have to live.
But his reaction to that, like, made me keep second guessing, like, oh, he has a cure if he gets to a hospital or something, because it just seemed like he wasn't reacting to the event of his own death in less than 48 hours or something. Maybe it's supposed to be him being kind of like single-minded about his baby, you know, and everything else, and being selfless. But still, we have very little to hook onto emotionally with this character, just because of the choices or because of the direction that he was given.
Well, yeah, and that's true. I kind of wish that they would have elaborated a little bit more about a lot of the exposition in this movie. We needed some exposition. So this outbreak or pandemic or whatever you want to call it has been going on for like some unspecified amount of time, long enough for the country to have a response to it and for infrastructure to break down, yeah. Right? We see that by them fishing the boxes out of the water that have all the necessary things that you need if you get bitten. Like, you have your timer and you have your spike, right? And so, like, obviously things have happened, but you're right. Like, when his wife first gets bit, his first instinct is to go find medical help. And I'm like, well, you're on a houseboat in the middle of the water because you don't want to be on land.
Which, I have to say, is one of the most original things I've seen, right? Of all this whole movie, the houseboat is the best idea. I love that idea.
Well, it makes me want to live on a houseboat, for sure.
If we've heard of the island idea, right, several times. But the houseboat thing, just, like, cruising down the river and just, like... Mm-hmm. Pilfering what you can along the way. That sounds great as far as like post-apocalyptic zombie apocalypse living. Houseboat idea sounds great.
I mean, and you're right. I've never really thought about that. Like, everyone thinks about island, and we have seen that before. The thing that I like most about like the story from this, or what we've seen in exposition, was like the country response to that. And this is like post-pandy for us, you know? Like, what would our own country be like if things were worse during COVID? You know, where we have these kinds of boxes and things like that. Like, I really enjoyed that aspect of it. So there are some things that are kind of like original in this, but not a whole lot. And as far as Martin Freeman's performance goes, I guess that I was expecting something a little bit more, because the movie's very, very melodramatic, right? And I like good melodrama, but I just didn't feel anything while I was watching it.
Because the characters aren't reacting to it.
Right.
And so it's like, we have to have something to react to. And if no one's doing it, it's like we're having to react to the ideas of these things happening, because we're not getting any cues from the movie itself, other than maybe some music, maybe a little bit of visual storytelling and things like that. You know, so I don't know. I mean, like, some people could really connect to this if they were like in a certain mood, or like just really in it, or they knew, you know, I don't know. Like, I'm sure, obviously, based on its reviews, which are good, and neither of us think this is a bad movie, right? It's just, like, it's hard to connect to.
The only character who really has some sort of emotional breakdown in this movie is the villain.
Yeah, actually, that's true. And so, like, I had a hard time, like I keep saying, I had a hard time connecting to this movie emotionally for those other reasons, but also, like, especially in the second half, like, I felt like I was really about to connect to this movie. Like, I was feeling the wife's death and everything. I was, like, a little weirded out by his stoicism, but I was, like, getting on board. And then we kept getting these intercuts that kind of stopped me from getting verklempt with, like, this random kid that it's trying to, like, kind of place into the story as a B-plot, right? And I didn't really have any idea until much later in the film what that was all about. Mm-hmm. And so I was, like, I was really getting on board. And then this nail in the coffin with... You know, once he meets that sex slave owning, human rights abusing asshole, Vic, right? That they, you know, didn't take out, even though they had the fucking gun. It was like almost three adults and a baby with a gun, and with all of his resources and his safe compound and everything else, with the ability to free all of the slaves and everything else. Mm-hmm. And they didn't shoot him in the fucking head, even though they know he was an evil, evil man, sex slaves and Aboriginal prisoners.
That's right.
Right. And then they just, like, it just seemed like they were a slave to the script, to the plot. And I did not like that.
100%. So I feel like all the characters in this movie make really, really weird choices.
Yeah.
Or I wouldn't say they're necessarily bad. That choice is bad. It's like the movie is going out of its way to protect its main characters and like just make them really, really
keep their morality intact.
Yes, right. Make them as virtuous as possible.
Which, no.
Yeah, I mean, like, in a situation like this, you're going to have to, right? He never kills that guy.
No.
You know? And like that man just doesn't really get the kind of comeuppance that we need to see.
And this might be a culture difference with our countries too.
And that's possible. You know, like I've seen, you know, my fair share of Australian movies. But
same. And they're not.
I mean, hell, I had an emotional connection to the Babadook.
They're all over the place just like they are here. You know?
Yeah.
Depends on the filmmaker.
This one, like you said, like I didn't connect to it emotionally, and I always connect to movies emotionally. Like that's my fucking thing, you know? And I will cry at the drop of a hat. And I was expecting by the end of this movie to be a blubbery mess of tears. Yeah. Like,
and they made space for it too with the editing at the end. They did a lot of visual storytelling with like the music swell, you know, as they're kind of showing, you know, them taking on the baby and everything else as the, you know, as the father kind of dies or is buried, you know. And, you know, it's like, I felt like, oh, this is where I was supposed to cry or feel something.
And you can pinpoint those moments, but like, I didn't care enough about the characters to do that.
I have heard that people really, really are affected by this movie. So I don't want to yuck anyone's yum. It just didn't happen for me.
And same. Like, I mean, so some of the experience of these characters is not my experience. I can't share anything with them. I don't have a child. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I don't.
Well, shit, that doesn't matter to me. Like, I watched Deep Into the Ocean with Michelle Pfeiffer, and I'm, like, bawling like an idiot the entire time.
I've watched many movies where I connect with parents, you know? Yeah. Just not this one at all. And, like, I do have parents myself, but I don't even connect to Toomey's, like, position or plight, you know? Yeah. I'm just, like, I just don't really care. Well,
speaking of which, like, that was a weird shoehorned theme, right? Mm-hmm. There's a strangely preachy theme about the, like, the Aborigines. And when we say the Aborigines, we know, like, capital A, Australian, right?
Right.
That seemed kind of a bit off and besides the point, right? It seemed really outside the scope of the movie, which I think took focus from, the emotional core of it. On top of the acting stoic, you know, I think that just didn't do it itself any favors. And I felt like it should have been, you know, everything else was really zoomed in on this family, and rightly so. And then it's, like, takes us up to this B plot. So the film alluded to a disconnect between the modern Western world and an indigenous traditional culture. And they seem to make, like, not only show that, but also take a moral stance on it by, like, the words they use, and like they're cleansing it. And then at the end, that shows them all kind of in a community with green grass and, you know, everything else. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. You know, directors Yolanda Ramke and Ben Howling felt that the story needed an Australian indigenous voice as new layers began to take shape within the film's post-apocalyptic Australian setting. And so that resulted in a parallel storyline so that the film tracks two sets of fathers and daughters navigating an environment ravaged by that epidemic. So while the British expat Andy, played by Martin Freeman, of course, strives to find a safe haven for his baby daughter, fiercely independent Aboriginal girl Thumi is trying to save her own father. Both need each other to survive. I didn't really connect to that. I think poetically it kind of works. Yeah. I feel like the math is there. But I think that's where it loses its emotional focus, because that was shoehorned in to essentially make it into a feature length. Among some other things, this was not in the short that was so lauded. None of the Aboriginal stuff, like the themes of, like, cleansing the land and going back to the old ways, you know, none of that kind of alluding, you know, moral stance on that kind of lesson. And then also it was only like a 6-minute short on the father and the daughter, you know, and setting himself up as the zombie victim to sacrifice himself for his daughter looking for help, you know. And so it's like, that's compelling. Why didn't we focus more on that and that decision and how he came to it versus I have an idea and then have it as a reveal? Like, that could have been a really emotional moment. You know, like, any of these moments could have been super emotional, but, like, we have this man at the center of the story that doesn't feel anything. And then we have this B plot that feels more like I'm being lectured, you know, and doesn't have a so what to our main focus or anything else.
I mean, I don't really have a problem with the indigenous, like, moments in the movie. But
no, absolutely not. But I, you know, I also, it's kind of strange to be like, Stone Age is the way. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Well, I mean, given the breakdown of society, like, and you live in a place like Australia, I feel like it's easier to, like, I don't know, get back to the land or whatever. But, like, the parts that I have a problem with are, you're right, it seems like sort of like added in and very like B-roll plot.
Look, I've heard the wolf cry to the Bluecorn Moon as much as the next guy. But I need it tied to something, like, oh, everyone's compressed in these cities and everything else, and a different way of living is the answer now versus what it felt like was, this is the way people should have been living to begin with. Oh. Right. And that was the moral stance that I got, like, it was trying to allude to. And I'm just like, it seemed like two movies mishmashed together. And it's because they were literally trying to take this and expand it into a feature film.
Maybe I just didn't like care enough about the movie to like sort of receive that message, because I didn't.
Yeah.
But it does feel like, you know, what you just said, you know, I felt like they were trying to make something longer. I don't know anything about this short film. I've never seen it. I had never heard of it. Like, I kind of just wanted to see a movie about a man and his daughter. I feel like just the man and his daughter for most of the movie with no other side characters, just him and the outbush, would have been a much more effective movie for me.
Yeah, same.
You know, him just like desperately trying to find people instead of stumbling upon people every time he took a fucking step in the outbush. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, and the same people sometimes.
The same people over and over again. Yeah. For as desolate as that area is supposed to be, there sure are a lot of fucking zombies and people out there.
It also doesn't give like weird, ignorant people, you know, any help about Australia when we're like, oh, the population's like 3 people and there's like giant spiders or something, you know?
I mean, but isn't that the truth? Y'all's animals are weird and large, Australia. I mean, come on. That's a claim to fame that you can hold on to and be really proud of.
Shave your bush.
But yeah, and the thing is that I love movies that have a really good emotional core. And it doesn't take me long to identify with at least one character in a movie, right? I just really didn't. The character I liked the most in this was in it for about 5 seconds. It was that school teacher.
Yes, me too. I liked her.
I mean, I was just like, I wanted to know more about her. I was like, oh, that was a wig she was wearing? I want to know more about that.
Maybe that's what movie needed, more women. For real.
I mean, there's women in it.
They're just, they were getting killed off left and right.
Yeah, and they just didn't have much to do aside from like his young companion, you know? And even then, I felt that they could have done a hell of a lot more with that character than what they did.
That school teacher was just there as like a fucking harbinger or something.
It was just another plot step to move it to the next thing. Like, we've talked a lot on this podcast about movies that have these like ABC plots.
Yeah.
And this is it. Like, by the numbers for sure. Yeah. They're like, now this is going to happen, and it's going to lead this to happen, and now it's going to lead this to happen. And oh, here's this person that we saw forever ago. Look, it's Vic again, everybody, coming through a tunnel with a gun. And I'm like, well, I could have guessed that we're going to meet up with him again because they didn't kill him the first time. There's just nothing
and
in this movie.
And I'd so much rather talking about, like, the zombies and the makeup and, like, the situation.
But how can we?
But we can't.
When we saw about 3 zombies in this. Like, we see outlines. We
and
see
them like in the mucus, dark. Mucus crusting, like, little chrysalis, and they break out into little zombies, and then they just have the eye makeup, and that's it.
And then I thought maybe they were holding the zombie reveal for when Martin Freeman's character turns into a zombie. Like, we'll really get a good full-on view of it. And we did. And I was just like, oh. You know?
It's just some bloke.
Also, the zombies are hiding their head in the sand. I'm like, that's neat.
They're hibernating, but why?
Yeah. But they're not. Why? You know, like, he keeps wanting to dig at the ground and stick his head in it.
We're not super interested in mythology, but, you know, if they're going out of their way to show something over and over and over.
Try to explain it a little bit. You know, I was just like, the whole time I was like, Jorge Romero is rolling over in his grave right now because there are no zombies in this zombie
movie. And that
would
have been a fucking horror moment. I mean, just look at 28 Days Later. Right? They're in that fucking tunnel, and it's one of the most horrific moments of that whole movie.
Yes.
Is when they start piling up in that tunnel, and there's only one, you know, way out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would have been a great opportunity. They try to do it a little bit with them all leaned up against the side, you know, across the whole tunnel, but it's like, apparently you can have whole gunfights in there, and they don't give a shit. You know, it's like, are you a horror movie? Like, come on.
I know, and hey, you know what? We got questions about that, too.
Okay.
So, why don't we just start with, okay, do you think this is a zombie movie, firstly?
Yes.
I mean, if you're going to call 28 Days Later a zombie movie, then you have to call
it an effective zombie movie as far as, like, zombie movies go, like, strictly from, like, grading from a zombie movie perspective?
Yeah. Mm. The whole time I was like, but where are the zombies, though? You know? So, that leads into, is this a horror movie?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I guess.
I mean, adjacently, I feel like
it's getting passing grades on these horror fronts.
Yeah. So I need to see the short, you know, maybe the short is more of a horror movie than this is. But this was just like barely a horror movie for me. I was like, it could have been a horror movie. Right. And it is, you know, just barely for me. Yeah. Like, I've seen horror movies that we've talked about in this podcast that are far more adjacent that I would consider more of a horror movie than this. Like, they were going for something very, very dramatic. They made something very melodramatic, and they forgot, oh, yeah, we kind of made this a genre film, and they forgot about the genre aspects of it through a lot of this movie, even though it's like the center point, the jumping off point for everything that happens. I'm like, y'all forgot that you're also making a horror movie. It's okay for your movies to be two different things, but you have to be able to do them both effectively.
Yeah.
And this film just doesn't, it's a good drama, mm-hmm. but it's not a very good horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Out of 5 stars, what would you rate Cargo?
I gave it 3 stars, which is, to me, that's above my 2.5. I think last week I gave whatever the fuck we watched,
Night of the Living Dead,
a 2.5, which is my kind of middle of the road beige meh rating.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 3 stars to me is enjoyable. It's starting to get on the enjoyable side of meh, but there's nothing super special about anything here, like the look and feel. Like, it's incredibly competently made, right? But it's almost less than the sum of its parts, though. In that sense, because like the acting is great, like it was filmed great, like it was edited fine, you know, the music's good, you know, it's just like, but none of it kind of comes together. Like, it's very workmanlike direction here. Like, there's very little here in the way of journey moments that you might get from a more epic film, from trying to get from A to B. Like, think of Lawrence of Arabia, or, you know, Into the Wild, or Lord of the Rings, or, you know, anything like that. So like, some of the behind the scenes describe horrific and historic weather that was happening in the bush that kept stopping and delaying filming. And I'm like, why couldn't they film that and create a moment for this father and this baby just trying to get across this landscape? They keep describing this landscape as like a character, and it's all the same, right? If nothing else, then to further flesh out the character of the countryside, which I would argue is a character in this movie. In fact, the director said, quote, "The landscape is a key player in our outbreak scenario. Its harsh and unforgiving nature throws up countless obstacles for our protagonists, while at the same time offering protection and a means to survive." Great, you know, but not
really. Did it though?
Yeah, kind of incidentally, right? And I'm like, really give us more moments between this like, the relationships in this movie, because they're just not there. It's very robotic. And it's like, on workmanlike direction, there's a kind of interesting cross-reference to our episode on Rare Exports, since that director had to expand his own better short into a movie, losing a bit of its soul in the process. You know, it's like they're too close to their own work. You know, at that point, maybe they've internalized the character struggles too much, like the emotion of it, not realizing that they need to work hard to create those same feelings in the audience to really earn them, right? Or again, it could be because they shoehorned in this B plot that seems to be at odds with the main quest, so to speak, thematically, right? It's all of these things. And so because of that, it's a 3-star for me.
I also gave it 3 stars. And I mean, like, it's no secret that like 3 stars is kind of a low rating for me. Like, I rarely ever rate movies lower than that. And when I do, I consider those movies to be fairly poor.
Yeah.
This was not a poor movie. It's a good movie. It's a well-made movie. You know, I wasn't necessarily I wasn't necessarily bored with it, but you're right. It was fine. It was a fine movie. I was thinking the whole time, I was like, you know what year this movie belonged in? 2023, because it's just okay. You know, like, it wasn't anything great.
Well, it's like, I'd rather watch The Road, and I'd also rather watch The Girl with All the Gifts.
And I want to watch a zombie movie that has zombies in it. I mean, call me old fashioned, but I was just like, okay, you know, like, I,
there's very little zombie horror.
Yeah. And even some of the, like, the real life horror, or the horror amongst like the living, I didn't get it. I didn't feel tense.
This movie, almost more than others, I felt like the zombies were more of the victims than the victims were.
Yeah. No shit. I mean, obviously,
which kind of is an achievement in its own way, you know, if they're going for that, you know, which you could, but still, you know,
I mean, so needless to say, I think that we can both agree that we weren't scared while watching right? So, yeah. This just seems like a silly question to ask, but who's the hottest guy in Cargo?
I think it's going to be their Aboriginal father.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Even though we saw him unzombified in flashbacks.
That's right. And in photos.
Yeah.
And just like, you could tell, like, they didn't spend too much time with this, and they should have. But like, that that girl's Toomey's upbringing, you know, we could have had more flashbacks or something.
Who I thought was a boy the whole fucking movie.
At first when I saw her, yeah, I thought so as well. Do you have any fun facts for me?
I do. Not really. I mean, they're not fun. They're just like, huh. And so, like, it's just I was kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel here. This is Australia's first Netflix original film, or at least the first Australian theatrical feature film to be released globally as a Netflix original.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that added some sort of pressure.
A little bit.
To these directors.
Like I said, I feel like we were talking offline about this during dinner.
Yeah.
Listeners. And there's a lot of anecdotes from like the Australian Film Commission or whatever groups like that, right? And I'm wondering if Netflix did go to them, and they even went to the director of Babadook, and they were like, what can you do for us? You know, from your country, this is what we're kind of what we're looking for. I think the Australian Film Commission or whatever its name is, you know, or any number of groups are there, were like, look at these shorts. This, you know, this could become a feature. Why don't you do this? You know, and then kind of like commissioned to put forth these directors to do this. And so they were, in a sense, hired directors. These directors, I don't think, ever really planned to make a feature based on this short. It's not like Mike Flanagan's Oculus, which was always planned to kind of be, you know, the movie.
The bones have to be there for it to work effectively.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, because we were just talking about like the shorts for Rare Exports. And this is the second time in this like quote unquote season of the Film Flamers where we've watched a movie for the very first time, the two of us, that's based on a short that neither one of us have seen either. Right. In that particular instance, we've gone back and watched the short. It's much, much better,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I'm like, just leave it at that. Like, there was really nothing that you could do with that short to extend it into a feature length film that was ever going to make it good. It was an enjoyable, really fun short. And I feel like this one may not be fun given the subject matter, but I feel like it's got to be better.
Pretty short. Yeah. This is also one of two 2017 horror movie feature films starring actor Martin Freeman. The pictures are Cargo from 2017, obviously, and Ghost Stories from 2017. If you recall, I think Ghost Stories was one of the first hot takes we did either in Shooting the Flames or a Hot Takes episode, where we both talked about watching Ghost Stories from the previous year because we started our podcast in 2018.
That was our very first Hot Takes episode.
Yeah. Ghost Stories. I still remember talking about it in our tiny little nook.
Same. Blast from the past with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because.
And we didn't like either of those really very much.
No, we did not. And I could probably go back and watch Ghost Stories again, but I vividly remember my favorite thing about that was Martin Freeman.
Me too. And I remember there was one that was like in an abandoned like warehouse or mine or something, you know, and there was like, it was kind of a different, right? It was different stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's because I really, really
and
like
some of them were good.
Anthology horror. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't.
Kind of ended up, that's what it was. It ended up being bad because of the twist, the stupid fucking twist at the end ruined
exactly.
the whole thing.
Exactly.
Anyway, sorry. Moving on. The Perfume. This is my last one, by the way. So gird your loins. The Perfume used in several scenes is Shalimar by Guerlain. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Guerlain. And that's also my mother's favorite perfume.
Is it really?
It is.
So.
Shalimar
sounds like a really good band name. It may already be.
I feel like it's very 80s.
It does sound very 80s. So.
Papa's on. I don't know.
Are you saying that a zombified Chris can be subdued by me spraying Shalimar?
I wouldn't know if I smelled it at this point. I don't remember it. She wore it like once every 10 years or something. I don't know.
Because this movie went way out of its way to have this like scent.
I would have never have known it by the bottle either. Like,
I didn't. I was just like, okay.
Because the original bottle that my mom had in the 80s had like the little like squeeze thing, I think, to spray it. Right. Mm-hmm. Like the little squeeze ball. Fancy squeeze ball. And this one, it was just like, you know, a normal perfume bottle.
But they were spraying all over that baby, too. I was just like, stop that. What are you doing to that baby? It can't breathe.
In the bush.
The bush is already breathtaking. Let it save whatever breath it could possibly have.
There was a moment where they're like burning all the fields and all the bodies or whatever. And it's like this epic moment where like the mother comes out of the smoke and you can see it. And it's like all filmic or whatever. And I was like, the allergies in which I would allergy in this scene.
Except there only seems to be like three plants.
I was like, I would die.
Three plants and really soft dirt.
I was like, I would sneeze and every fucking zombie in the whole continent
would come a running.
Running.
Remind me not to be in the cage with you.
Right.
I think that just about wraps up our conversation on Cargo. As always, we would like to know what you think about this movie and our conversation about it. Find us on social media at The Film Flamers on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram.
You can email us at Tired Queens or call our hotline at 972-666-7733. Ride me through the bush. Baby.
Rosie Rose. Now I can't even think of something. Come be my fortified shelter sex slave.
Stay tuned for that Patreon poll that we've got going on over there, where you can pick from things like the Train to Busan sequel, Peninsula, or Dead Snow, or what we think might be the winner, Wild Zero, right? Which a patron has begged us to watch. So go over there and vote. Become a patron if you aren't already, and vote in that poll.
Head over to patreon.com/thefilmflamers. Join our family. There's that poll. There's going to be more polls. All the things. And also, we need some more reviews and ratings over on Apple Podcasts and iTunes as we are inching ever closer to 100. I think we are like 14 away at this point, maybe 13. Mm-hmm. So go do that. We will read that review on Shooting the Flames.
Well, Robert.
Yes, Chris.
I think I'm done walking through the bush.
Would you say that you're booshed from the boosh?
I'm booshed from the boosh. It's time for me to lay me down.
And have some sweet dreams. It's time for me to lay me down.
I'm booshed.
I'm so booshed.